environment and land use. A couple comments on how we're going to handle the hearing. First of all, respect to Senate Bill 537, which we were going to have a brief introductory on how the Dash 1 amendments might operate with respect to Measure 37. My understanding is those Dash 1 amendments have just come out. Is that right? Okay, we haven't even seen them, so we're not going to do that. We're not going to have any Measure 37 discussion today because of that. With respect to the remainder of the bills, they all relate to annexation. They all have different features associated with them. I'm going to have the committee staff give a very brief summary of each bill. On the testimony from the committee, from the audience, I don't expect to go bill to bill to bill to bill. I'm going to open public hearings on all of the bills. We'll just go down them and feel free to comment on any or all of the bills you wish to comment on. We're not going to move any of the bills today. So that's how the hearing is going to be accomplished. So I'm going to go ahead and open public hearing on Senate Bills 886, 887, 888, 888, 380, 732, and 699. Right, and I'm getting a hand wave from Senator Westland. If you'd like to come up first, that would be fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Senator Ben Westland, District 27, Central Oregon. I am here to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 380. I think most of you are familiar that this is what I call the double vote or double majority. Don't get that confused with other double majorities. We have a situation I think most of you are aware of prior to 1993. It required two votes to annex property into a city, one, the existing city limits, and secondly, but just as importantly, the area to be annexed. After 93, that was changed with some good thinking to require only one vote, a single majority of the city and the newly created district. I believe that has created some inequities and injustices. Just an aside, the first city to utilize this new legislation was indeed my very own. It was incredibly controversial. It was a little heavy-handed, if you will. I think the ability for a city to annex property is obviously incredibly important. I think it's one of these things that falls into the category of it's not what you do, it's how you do it. And I think if we required two votes, it would require the cities to deal more sensitively and with more empathy the areas to be annexed. I do have an issue that is not covered in the bill that is really what I think we need to wrestle with in this is what happens when we get to those areas that have become unincorporated islands surrounded by a city that are just, for lack of a better term, completely recalcitrant in their attitudes or desires to join the city. That's not fair either. So someplace between this double annexation or double vote and an ability to acquire these islands, I think would be the best public policy. I know you have a long agenda, so I'll temper my remarks, shorten them, and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I think we're going to hear some testimony that you need the ability to go ahead and annex folks to, you're paying for their services and that it's only fair to bring them in. How would you address that situation?
Well, prior to 91 or 93, 76% of the annexations went through on the first vote. Why? Because the city went to the areas and said, okay, what are your needs? What are the issues? How can we address them? What's a fair compromise and understanding? 76% of the votes went through on the first time, and almost all of them went through on the second. What was the problem? Well, the problem we were trying to address legitimately were these islands surrounded by unincorporated areas. It's one of those things where I think we did solve that problem, but we created some inequities while we did it.
Okay. Thank you. Me? Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Well, let's go to Rob Corbett and Doug Riggs, please.
Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Doug Riggs here on behalf of the Central Oregon Cities Organization. I'm passing out some written testimony, and I'll have another article that I want to share with you in a few minutes. I'm going to turn this over to Rob Corbett, who is the city manager of the city of Prineville, here in a moment. But I did want to make a few opening comments, and I've met with a number of you over the past several days. We certainly understand the concerns over annexation issues that have arisen over the last several months with the developments in the Portland area. And we certainly understand the need for cities to go out and try to sell the idea of annexation. Let me give you one example. City of Redmond, which is one of the Central Oregon City's members, annexed a fairly large piece of property to the west of town this past fall. The city council members individually spent several weeks going out and going door to door, knocking on doors and talking to people about the annexation. They held public meetings, town hall meetings, they had city council meetings, they did public notification, they did mailings. And in the end, although that increased the percentage of the vote in that area that supported the annexation, it still didn't get the vote in that annexed area over 50%. Another case I wanted to bring
up. Excuse me, but in that case, did they need the dual majority?
It was a single majority vote.
So the annexation was successful?
It was, exactly. Other cities, Sisters, for instance, has a double majority provision. And so Sisters is going through an annexation right now, and they require a double majority. Band is a good case, and the senator raised the Band case. He's correct that the area that included the south of town portion that was annexed voted against the annexation. An interesting situation occurred little more than a year and a half later when the septic system and the sewer system that had been installed by the developer failed, and there wasn't enough water pressure to operate a garden hose, let alone a fire hydrant or shower. And the developer, who would not put money aside for upgrades and operations and maintenance, disappeared. And as a result, the city had to step in and take over that system. And fortunately, the city had annexed the area. Now, I'd argue if you went back and you asked the citizens of the area just a year and a half previously if they wanted to be annexed by a city, and they denied that, if you asked them down the road, were they happy that they were actually part of the city of Bend, my guess is that the majority would have said yes. So my point is that it's awfully difficult in all cases to get to a double majority. The second point that I wanted to make is that if you're looking at economic development and job creation, and this is something that's very hard to get your fingers on the exact numbers, but if you take the Central Oregon area, I'm going to pass out an article to your staff. It talks about the economic development going on within the city limits of Redmond. The Redmond Economic Development Association did a study and found that in the next 5 years, there's going to be about $330 million of economic activity taking place within the city limits. And I think that's an important thing to understand. Most economic development activity in this state takes place within an urban growth boundary, within an annexed area. And for the most part, that's because cities provide the services that makes that possible. And so my concern as a representative of cities that are fast growing is to continue that economic growth, you need to be able to add land, annex property. Now, the Washington County area is a little bit different than what we're facing in Central Oregon because Washington County has an agency called Clean Water Services, which provides some of those same services that in Central Oregon would be provided by a city. So there's a differentiation between east and west that I think is worth looking at. The final point that I wanted to make before I turn it over to Rob is something that has come up a number of times in the House hearings on this issue. And a number of people have suggested that if you're in an area that is outside of a city that is targeted for annexation, that you have no representation in that discussion. And I thought about that for a few days, and then I started talking to a few folks. And to be entirely honest, that's not accurate. If you are an unincorporated Washington County, you have Washington County commissioners who are your elected representatives who could object to a city annexation plan, could object to a comprehensive plan, etc. If you're in Crook County, and the city of Prineville wants to annex a piece of property, and they go through a comprehensive plan amendment or UGB expansion plan amendment or an urban reserve, the county commission must sign off during that planning process. So at any one of those steps during the process, the county commissioners who represent those people within those county territories that are not yet within the city, they are the people who one for one represent the residents of that area. So while you might be able to argue that those people aren't represented one-to-one in the actual vote, the decision to allow the vote to take place or to allow territory to be annexed into a city has at several points along the way direct input and a veto authority by the county commissioners. So with those 3 points, I think I'll close. I'll let Rob talk a little bit about his situation and be willing to answer any questions.
Thank you. I think this is a good case for one size doesn't fit all. My name is Rob Corbett. I'm the city manager for the city of Prineville. I grew up in Burns, Oregon. I took a job in Crook County about a year ago. In that time, the first activity that I witnessed was that the city had just completed an 11-year process of expanding the urban growth boundary. The city saw growth as an opportunity to allow economic development to take place to help the community recover from a downturn in the use of natural resources. We saw it as paramount as our ability to be able to bring lands into the community to have public services so that growth could occur. I think the handout that you have in front of you shows that that's paying off big dividends for another community in Redmond, where $400 million, I believe, of investment is going on in that community. During the 11-year process that we went through, we worked in coordination with Crook County. There were no less than 10 public hearings. Crook County Court signed off on identifying these areas as at some point those areas would be urbanized. It 300 acres of property was brought into the community. Just over half of it was industrial, and a little less than half was residential. The process that started has spurred tremendous growth in our community. Every parcel of significant size within our urban growth boundary in our community either has active land use activity or discussions going on it right now. Hampering or removing our ability to bring these lands into the city strangles our ability to equitably pay for the services that these developments put on cities. You and I both struggle with the ability to govern during these times of no new taxes. We have worked for 11 years to plan for the orderly growth of our community, and your action on these bills or any mention of a freeze on annexation shoves our efforts aside to solve a problem for a minority, ignoring the will of our majority. Growth is good for Prineville and Crook County. As land is available to be developed, investment and jobs move into the area. Please don't impose on us actions that hamper our years of efforts to recover from the recent economic downturn. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Just a few questions. You know, there's a problem in Washington County that's been getting a lot of attention. But there are folks such as Senator Westland in the Bend and Representative Garrard in Klamath Falls, Senator Schrader in the Canby area. A lot of people see problems with the annexation process all over the state. And can you explain to me what harm it would do to put a 2-year moratorium on forcible annexations while we get it figured out? How would that hurt?
Well, what we're dealing with is rapid growth, and I'm not a planner, but I've been a city manager for 5 years, and what I could see as hampering our growth if that moratorium were put in place is that essentially one landowner could stand in the way of economic development. If we...
Excuse me, but you just have to convince the landowner that it's in that landowner's interest to be annexed. Then you don't have a problem.
I think what the issue comes down to is that one landowner who might be opposed to certain development could hold up the entire community. Why would we want to provide services and infrastructure to a piece of property if we're not sure that we are able to afford the amenities that property is going to bring into the community? One person can hold up an entire... There's an ongoing debate in Central Oregon and in small communities, growth versus anti-growth. And if you have somebody standing in the way that is physically separated from the opportunity to create jobs in a community, say, then that person could hold up the whole economic development opportunity because you have to annex in contiguous fashion.
What plans do you have to annex in the next 2 years?
I have over 100, and I would guess that I have 150 acres of industrial property that could be brought into the city limits.
Okay, so let's say there was a moratorium on forcible annexation of residential property. That lets you off the hook.
The only thing I would say to that is that I'm still risking my ability to be able to provide services to that area based on the whims of Salem. You guys dictate to me whether you're coming into my town and you're telling me that I have to provide services for a parcel of ground that I don't know if I'll ever be able to recover my investment off of that property.
Okay. I don't want to get in an argument with you. I'm not sure why we're telling you have to provide services, because I'm not quite following.
Well,
that.
One of the issues that I have in my urban growth boundary is that I have septic systems and water wells that are... I have water that's polluted, and I have septic tanks that are failing. If I am not able to run public services out to some areas, such as a subdivision in my urban growth boundary, then that subdivision isn't going to occur because I am reaching capacity on the natural environment to be able to deal with these types of things. So under the scenario that you've painted, I'm going to run my services out into the urban growth boundary so that that area can develop, knowing that that area is going to impose pressure on my infrastructure, realizing that I might not be able to get those people to pay their fair share of the infrastructure.
Well, I guess, Mr. Corbett, I mean, this is complex, and we don't need to beat this to death. It would be my thought that nobody's going to force you to be running your infrastructure out there until they're annexed, and that's the carrot and the stick. I mean, the carrot is you want to come into the city, then you'll get your services.
So then we hamper the growth.
Chairman,
you make it dependent on the on it's in the interest of the people to be annexed to want to come in. I think that's the philosophy that a lot of people are pushing.
Mr. Chairman, Doug Riggs, for the record, I think the concern with any sort of a moratorium or a one-size-fits-all is that in cases of fast-growing communities, a one-size-does-not-fit-all. And so if Rob and the city of Prineville are trying to bring in economic development land and industrial land, let's say he lands a major employer who's going to bring 600 new jobs into town, he concurrently has to provide the residential development to be able to meet the needs of those people moving into town. Redmond faced the same situation last year. They landed T-Mobile. T-Mobile came in and brought in 600 jobs immediately, and they had to move quickly on an annexation process to bring land that had been in their urban reserve for some period of time into the urban growth boundary and annex it for development. And so, and I want to go back. I know it sounds... the argument that you can somehow convince a group of people who live outside the city of that you're talking about to voluntarily agree to be annexed and pay slightly higher costs for city services sounds good. In the case of Redmond, as I said, the city council members every week, every weekend, every weeknight went out and knocked on doors and held those public hearings and tried to get the consensus. They came close, but they didn't get over the top. Let's say that we'd had a double majority in that situation. We would have had T-Mobile coming in with 600 new jobs and no new areas to build houses to be able to accommodate those people. So, I mean, it puts fast-growing areas, which are trying to respond quickly to economic growth, in a bit of a bind.
Okay.
That's the problem.
Committee? Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just submit testimony from the city of Madras as well, I'll do that for the record.
Is that consistent with the testimony of Prineville?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. You know, I wanted to get the folks who came quite a ways. Jack Hoffman?
Thank you.
I don't remember where you're from.
City of Lake Oswego.
Oh, yes. Not that far.
Not far, but I am back at the study session.
Good.
It starts in an hour, so hopefully I'll be here in the back.
Where's the Stafford Triangle? No, I'm only kidding. Okay.
I'm going to try and answer your question. I'm going to introduce myself. I'm going to try and answer your question.
I'll be able to be picked up both by this microphone when I stand up there. Jack Hoffman, like you, I'm an elected official. I have been on City Council for Lake Oswego for 6 years now. I'm also an attorney with the law firm of Dunn Carney. I do land use. I represent plaintiffs in personal injury actions. And ironically, I represent landowners whose property is being condemned. So I understand the issue of landowners and government takings. In connection with the two annexation issues that I'm concerned about, which is the 887 and the 380, what I'd like to say is that annexation, and stress that annexation, is a really critical tool for urban cities. That is based upon state land use planning, local Goal 14, and the fact that cities have adopted comprehensive plans to urbanize their to provide urban services to their areas. In the in Metro, I'm also the chair of the Impact Metropolitan Advisory Committee, which is a committee of local officials, including the mayor of Beaverton, the mayor of Hillsborough, and the county commissioners. We had a mini symposium 2 weeks ago, and it's clear that this is an issue that is not just Beaverton's problem or Ashland's problem or Madras's problem or Redmond's problem. And if you look at the 2040 plan, this is the plan that Metro has given us based upon state mandate. And when those who are concerned about protecting farmland, we have to have all the tools in our tool chest, in our toolbox to protect the farmland in that area. The Western Washington County. Annexation is one of those tools. And so when somebody would ask, can you have farmland and livable communities? The answer is yes, as long as you continue to provide us our tools. As Representative Girard said Saturday before the Oregonians in Action, let me quote it, land use should be a local process. It should be made by local officials. And that's what annexation is. There are two kinds of annexation that we're talking about, really. Island annexation and the Chapter 195 annexation, which is the Urban Services Provider Agreement. Island annexations weren't invented yesterday, or last year, or last decade. Island annexations were part of the Oregon's culture and municipal scene beginning in 1919. Island annexations have been with us for almost 86 years. And when they first started, they didn't have or require a vote of those who were in those islands. The ORS 195 started in 1993, and the purpose of ORS 195 annexations was the Urban Service Provider Agreements, in which the city, the county, and the districts got together, provided urban service agreements for the areas outside the cities and inside the urban services boundary, and agreed about how they were going to provide services, and that it led to the vote. You know, you could have the single vote, and that's what we're in favor of. To say that those outside the city and inside or in the unincorporated area don't have a vote is really misstating the situation. Because in Lake Oswego's case,
we have approximately 8 areas that are unincorporated Clackamas County. 2 years ago, in 2003, we began a dialogue, not necessarily with the voters here, but they got notices, but we began a dialogue with other elected officials. We began a dialogue with the Lake Grove Fire District and the Lake Grove Water District and the school district and the county. And it's only when we got those agreements with the other elected officials that then we started to move forward with the single majority annexation. We don't have double majority types of voting in almost any other situation I can think of. For example, if we have a county levy, we don't require a majority of the people in Lake Oswego and Oregon City and in Milwaukee to agree to a county levy. Similarly, when this body acts, they don't ask for and get a vote of the people. They act. I didn't vote on the things that you passed 2 years ago, whether it be revenue measures. I didn't vote on it. I didn't even vote for you. I voted for my legislators. So those who say that this is unfair because they don't have a vote, I think is missing the point. Those people who have bought a lot, built a house in an urban environment, have essentially voted with their feet. Because they're essentially part of the urban fabric. They're part of a functional city.
With Lake Oswego, what we did is we went out and talked to the elected officials from the other districts. And we had those agreements. We got resistance from the voters, and so we backed off. We're going on a different direction. But certainly we have
islands here that were created just because of the nature in which the city developed.
In terms of fairness, you've heard a lot about fairness, and like Oswego, it's acutely sensitive that the neighborhoods are acutely sensitive to the fairness issue. In Lake Oswego, for example, we have a street maintenance fee, $3 a month. And so,
is it fair for these people in the green area to not pay that $3 a month when they come out here and go left or right on a city street and not pay that $3 a month, whereas this person living right here pays it? Or me, I live right here and I pay it. So what difference? How can you say it's not fair? Or how can you say it is fair for this person not to pay the $3 a month and this person to pay it? Similarly, Lake Oswego has, in the last 15 years, passed almost $55 million of bonds for open space, natural resources, and parks. These people pay $6,000 for that over a period of the life of the bond. And these people pay zero. Zilch. Now, is that fair? Because they've come down to George Rogers, and we're right here. We have passed open space.
Just a couple more minutes. I'm sorry. We have a whole room full of people.
So that's, and Lake Oswego, I don't think, is unique in terms of the fairness issue. So just answering your questions that were addressed to the other city manager in terms of why forcible annexation, I think I disagree with that forcible category, though it depends upon which side of the city limits you're on. But in terms of what will happen if we wait 2 years, we're going to lose natural resources, at least in our city. And I don't know other cities. Because our natural resource ordinances are stricter and more environmentally friendly than the counties. We have lost natural resources already. We're going to lose more.
Well, just to interject for a minute. So what are your annexation plans for the next 2 years?
We would like to annex the islands, and we would like to engage in discussion with these people on the We have contracted with. We will contract with Portland State University and Clackamas County dispute resolution to start a community dialogue with these people.
Okay.
So, in conclusion, we would. recommend or prefer or advocate that there be no moratorium and that allow us to continue to do what we're doing. Thank you.
You know, I mean, just a couple questions. You gave a defense of island annexations. I mean, you understand how that process has been abused in Washington County.
There are a lot of things that are abused over a time period. It may be a local official issue.
Well, I mean, the citizens who live in my neighborhood and in my Senate district feel very abused by the island annexation process, where it appears that over the last few years there was a concerted design to create islands just so the property could then be annexed. And it's not like there was an island was accidentally formed. It was intentionally formed to be annexed, and that's an abuse of the island annexation process.
I can't address that because I don't know the specifics of Beaverton. But what I do know that in our city we have
a lot of neighborhood associations who, and those are all our neighborhood associations, some are inside the city, some are not.
And I understand the vocal minority. But and the concern they have about being annexed against their own will, but whether that doesn't necessarily mean that the silent majority is wrong.
All right. I'm just not convinced that a 2-year moratorium would hurt you. You said that well you might lose some
natural resources. No,
natural
trees.
I mean, can you quantify that in any way? Is there any way to understand the scope of that?
Well,
depends on how significant trees are. I mean, the fact that you lose natural resources, the trees are on the trees are.
Well, I'm into natural resources, but...
But in our area, for example, I'll just give you a couple of examples. We've lost natural resources up here. These people thought they were going to be annexed, so they cut down the trees. It's kind of what village does. We've had people in this area that cut down the trees and then asked to be annexed into the area. We're having that. We're having landowners cut down the trees in a tree grove and then ask to be annexed in Lake Oswego. Okay. So that would be one of the problems that we would run into is not being able to control natural resources, especially up here at the beach in the Tryon Creek.
Did you say control the natural resources? Is that a phrase
sure.
You just used? Well, why should city government control natural anything on private property? Can you help me understand what you just said?
Why should the government control
anything? Why should city government control somebody's ability to cut down a tree or not?
Like a tree code?
What's that?
Like a tree code? Tree code?
Is that what you have in Lake Oswego?
Yes, we have a tree code.
Senator Atkinson, it's the tree capital of the country, but go ahead.
Well, but these people aren't in the city, is my point.
What happens, there's a couple things.
I have I'm asking a loaded question because I have someone in Southern Oregon who did some, who cut down a tree and has got completely beat up for it, actually cut down a tree for health reasons for the community. And he's been filleted in the newspaper and killed by his local community, destroyed by his local city, and the local city wants to control him. I find that offensive.
I'm not sure. Well, every statute, every piece of legislation is in some way controlled. It controls how fast I go, controls what I do, controls etc. We're all controlled. But when I talk about in terms of regulating resources, it's a statewide land use goal. We've got land use goal 3, 4, and 5, and 6 control and regulate natural resources within Oregon. We are required, every city is required to regulate natural resources within the urban services.
I know, I don't think you understand. That's fine.
Well, if you're asking us, do we regulate trees? Yes. Do we regulate riparian areas? Yes. Is the land we've ever regulated? Yes.
Anything else from the committee? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for letting me go.
Oh, that's all right. Julia Brim Edwards, please.
I can't control something outside of city limits. Well, you're outside of city limits.
They don't want you to be outside of city limits.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, my name is Alan Tressiter, here before you today representing Nike. And with me is Julia Brim Edwards, who is Deputy Director of State and Community Federal Affairs for the corporation. And we're here to talk to you, I think, about Senate Bill 732, but it may involve other bills, but specifically related to proposed annexation of the Nike campus. And with that, I'll let Ms. Edwards talk.
Thank you, Mr. Tressider. Chair Ringo, Vice Chair Atkinson, members of the committee, I'm Julia Brim Edwards. As Mr. Tressider mentioned, I'm Nike's Deputy Director for State and Public Affairs. I've got my written testimony coming around, as well as a backgrounder that provides some information not only about the annexations that Chair Ringo referenced in Washington County, but detailed information about Nike's campus. I appreciate the opportunity to address the committee today about an issue that's very important to Nike, both as a company and as a significant employer in the state. And we're here today to express our strong support for Senate Bill 732. We have some Dash 1 amendments that we just received today, and they need some additional work, which I think Mr. Tressider is going to speak to.
Mr. Chairman, I want to make it really clear that the Dash 1 amendments that are before you, they appear to us to eliminate what has been commonly known as the tech exemption, that Tektronix has a statutory exemption from certain annexation rules. And our intention with these amendments was to add on to that exemption and not eliminate that exemption. I believe these amendments have eliminated, and we want to make it very clear for the record and for the committee, that is not the desired result. We don't want to eliminate Tektronix exemption. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So we're going to be working that out. Just to provide some background, our perspective of this bill with the amendments as they're revised is that it will help Nike grow in Oregon, restore fairness to the annexation process, and provide us as a company with greater certainty to plan for growth. As you probably all know, Nike's a homegrown Oregon business. We directly employ about 6,100 individuals in Washington County, and we have about a $2 billion economic impact on the state. Nike currently has plans for four new buildings on our campus, both to accommodate current and future growth. It would be two office buildings, major office buildings, an additional child care center, and a parking structure. All these buildings have a 30-plus year useful life, and our planning process and our investment decisions reflect that lengthy time period. As was referenced earlier by the chair, the city of Beaverton recently has made some pretty dramatic changes in their annexation process, and they've created a great deal of uncertainty, not only for businesses in the area, both large and small, but also for large swaths of residential areas in unincorporated Washington County. And they did this through use of the island annexation process that was referenced by essentially over the last couple of years annexing, whether it was streets, Highway 26, or public properties, and created, in effect, through these street annexations that did not require public notice to adjacent property owners, essentially created islands of property in unincorporated Washington County, but somewhat fictional islands in that on the other side of the street there is unincorporated. The only way that we're essentially hemmed in or islanded in, both Nike and lots of other residential neighborhoods and businesses, is through a street or public property.
Okay. Well, can you just explain that a little more? I mean, what was the history of Beaverton in terms of annexing the streets directly adjacent to the Nike campus?
Well, they, over the last, I could submit for the record their annexation process, but what they've done is over a number of years annex street. It's, and according to the law, they are only required to notify certain parties, and it would be the county, the sheriff's office, but not the adjacent property owners. So for us as a company and for other landowners or adjacent property owners, we weren't notified that, in fact, we were being islanded throughout the over the last several years. And they did it, you know, in a number of different steps and apparently for a number of different reasons. But the end result was that you now have significant, well, portion of the neighborhoods and also major industrial properties that have been islanded through just streets and public properties. So Once they islanded several of the properties last November, they announced that they'd changed their longstanding policy to start annexing properties without the owner's consent. And they started annexing properties, and they've, over the last 3 months, annexed both businesses and residential areas. So for us as a company, that causes us a great deal of concern, and we believe it creates a negative business climate in Washington County and in the state and the region. In our particular case, the city would not be providing any new significant services through a forced annexation. So we're here today to support Senate Bill 732 and the amendments as revised. We appreciate the legislature's willingness to look at the annexation laws and to be willing to modify them in order to provide more fairness to property owners and businesses. We need certainty. We've had a good relationship with Washington County in terms of planning our campus. We built the entire Nike campus working with the Washington County planning staff. We also have an excellent relationship with the Washington County Sheriff's Office. They provide our law enforcement services, and we pay an additional fee for the enhanced sheriff's patrol. For more than a decade, Oregon law has allowed some business property owners with the right to consent to the annexation. So we are looking at this bill would amend that particular statute, and it would give us the certainty to be able to proceed with our building plans and also another major land transaction in the area. The amendments that we're offering are just a clarification of the conditions, and we'd like to revise them, as we noted earlier. I think one thing that's important to note that there's been some confusion about the impact of this bill on the local public schools. Currently, the way services are set up, special districts and school districts are set up in Washington County, is that we already, through our property tax, support Beaverton Public Schools and many other regional services. So the services are provided on a regional basis, just as opposed to just in the city. In the handout that was given out, there's a long list of local entities that we support through our property taxes, whether it's PCC, the Beaverton Public Schools, the Zoo, Metro, Tualatin Valley Parks and Rec, Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue. So we already support those providers through our property taxes. This, we pay about $1.5 million in taxes to Beaverton Public Schools. This bill would not change that, either adding or subtracting to the amount that's paid. So there's no net impact, and I know that's been a question that people have had of what the impact on the local school system. So I want to note that and just finish up by thanking the committee for their willingness to review this bill. It's something that we think is very important for our ability to expand in the future and help be an economic engine in the state of Oregon.
Thank you. Questions? Ms. Tressor, I have one question.
Mr. Chairman?
Because I hear this same argument from a few mills in my district that don't want to be annexed in, and et cetera, et cetera. But let's do it the other way. Let's assume that you are completely surrounded by the city. Mm-hmm. And you want it to be annexed. Mm-hmm. Do you believe the system works?
Do I believe the system works?
Or do you think that somebody can one person can stand in your way, and even though you wanted to be annexed, you'd go through a maze of lawyers and bills and expense and time and not be able to be annexed?
I think the annexation...
On the other foot.
Yeah, the annexation process is not designed to be a streamlined, simple process. It is, I think, necessarily complex.
Unnecessarily?
It's complex. It's complex. And I don't know, I'm not as familiar with the inside the city annexation process as I am in this instance. So I quite frankly don't know the answer to your question if one person can block an annexation. I think the island annexation issue was set up that if a city was incorporated and inadvertently there was a plot of land that wasn't annexed into the city, that you could capture that inside the city limits. The island annexation was never set up or designed to be you annex the street out to our property. Like a board game, you go around our property and all of a sudden we have captured you and now you can be annexed. I cannot believe that this assembly had that in mind when they designed the annexation process.
But I have experiences where the city will systematically go around somebody, but then doesn't want to have anything to do with them, and essentially could be back to their property. It's just interesting. Senator, did you have a question? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Call forward Mayor Janet Taylor and City Council Person Daniels.
No. That's not.
Different city.
Not part of ours.
From the city of Corvallis, but go ahead, Madam Mayor, first.
Thank you. Janet Taylor, Mayor of Salem. Kind of nice to be on this side of it for once instead of your side. Appreciate the time today. I'm also going to bring, I wanted to bring up two people that are with me, if that would be all right, sir.
That'd
would
be that fine.
Okay. Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm doing what the chair asked me to do. So,
Mr. Glassick, Larry Glassick, who's president of our Strategic Economic Development Corporation, and Mitch Rose, who's our interim planning administrator for the city. Well, first I want to say Salem is a strong supporter of the urban growth boundary. After all, the farmland around us is important. We're the biggest agricultural area in the state, $518 million of gross revenue. So it's important for us that we don't sprawl out into the urban, outside the urban growth boundary. We are also working very hard on periodic review. Not my favorite thing to do right now, but it's because it's very complicated, trying to get very dense inside of our city and protect and use the land we have very well. We do not see through studies we've had done that we benefit from annexations financially. We don't gain additional property tax, because what we do is we turn around and provide extra services. So it's pretty much a wash for us fiscally. I'm very concerned that an issue in Beaverton is affecting all of the cities in Oregon in this way. One size does not fit all, which I've heard many people say, and it does concern me. If you do a moratorium for 2 years, then I would say it would be nice to have a moratorium on all the rest of the land use laws that really are driving how we use our urban growth boundary, our city limits area, the land use laws that say we have to get more dense and have to reduce our vehicle miles and all of those things. Annexations are our way to be able to grow in our city and have a good economy in our city. We have some very unique situations in Salem that I would like to address, and Mitch, maybe you could help me on this. We have, and Mitch, if you would hold them up so I can see, and I'd like to... Right, okay. The red areas are the areas inside our urban growth boundary that are not inside our city limits. So you can see there's some pretty big chunks of property there that are not in our city limits. All right. Well, if you'll notice on the right-hand side, that's the east side of Salem, and we have a map here, Mitch, that if you could bring them, maybe put it up so I can see it too. Thank you. No, not that one, the other one. On the east side of Salem...
Mitch, you're a great easel.
On the east side of Salem were those two big chunks you saw. The top area is Jan Ray. The bottom area is the East Salem, what they call the East Salem suburban area. They're very, very populated, but they are not in our city limits. We provide the water and sewer service to those areas because when the land use law of urban growth boundary came in, they already had some water and sewer services there. So we bought their systems, we maintain their systems, but they're not in our city limits.
But are they paying for those systems?
They pay for the water and sewer only.
Okay.
Yeah, they pay for the water and sewer only. So we have a unique situation, and our new city council is saying these are wonderful neighbors. I mean, they use our parks, they use our libraries, they come to our neighborhood association meetings. They constantly are requesting more code enforcement. That's not our responsibility. They want... more graffiti help. That's the county's responsibility. We would like to really make these areas a true part of our city, and we would like to be able to enclave or island that area and bring it into our city, provide the increased services they want, and become a much more efficient area. What happens now is that we have all...
When you said you wanted to island it, you mean bring it in as an island annexation?
Right, right.
And you can do that without any public hearing, isn't that true?
You know, that's beyond Mitch. Do you know? I'm not...
In some cases,
yes. And the little blue areas are where they have signed an agreement to annex into the city whenever they do become an island. So there are many pieces that we have provided services to where in exchange they are signed an agreement with us.
Okay.
All right. What we run into is we have all kinds of...
Excuse me. Uh-huh. Senator Burdick?
That's not even close to an island, though, right? Because it's EFU outside there.
Right, folks. Right. So we would have to do... Yeah, there's little wherever there's touching, we would like to do that.
Okay.
What you run into when you have this situation is you have all kinds of intergovernmental agreements for everything you can imagine, for water and for sewer and for streets and for traffic lights. And so there's this overlapping of efforts. What concerned me most was recently mentioned that top area where Chemeketa Community College is, that large area that doesn't have a lot of streets. It's in the county. The city fire department maintains a branch fire station there to partner with Chemeketa for fireman training and EMT training. It's a very good partnership. However, recently, right near Chemeketa, there was a very high emergency medical call. Because that is in the county had to respond to that, which took quite a while because their only vehicle was quite a ways away. If that was in the city limits, then our city fire truck could have gone and responded to the emergency. So we have a lot of things that, frankly, endanger the public because we're not organized. Well,
just a couple more minutes,
okay.
Mayor.
Thank you. Sorry, I'm used to talking.
I got a long list of people here.
I'll make it quick. The red area, that is Lancaster Drive. City limits go in and out along that area. That is all heavily developed commercial property that is in the county, but it's inside our urban growth boundary.
But not in the city?
It's not in the city. Not in the city. So what we're... Yeah. So what we're facing...
Excuse me.
Yes.
Mitch, where's Corden Road? Senator Byer and I are trying to figure that out.
Corden Road's right here.
Oh. Yeah, and then...
That's probably one of the best landmarks you can drive in the state to see on urban growth boundary.
It's beautiful.
Farmland over here, and there's a lot of urban or semi-urban development over here, whether you're in the city proper or in these areas that we hope to connect.
Okay.
Do you have any short-term plans, i.e. next 2 years, to annex those parcels?
Absolutely. That is really what we want to do.
And you hope to do it through island annexation?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. And you can do that without getting the consent of the people who live
yes.
there?
Yes.
And you don't have any problem with that?
You know, I don't, because we have so many requests from them. Please annex me.
So,
but we can't because they're not contiguous to the city limits. They want more services. They want the urban services.
Oh, you're talking the blue areas. Yeah.
No, I mean even some people in the gray areas are saying, can't you annex me so I can get more services? And, you know, I really believe it's time that we start listening to what the word is, urban service, urban growth boundary. We're supposed to be developed within that urban growth boundary. We're supposed to provide a high level of services so that people who need it and want it have it available and protect our farmlands. And I think it's time that we started supporting easier annexation. So I have three requests. Don't pass any of these annexation bills. Make it easier to annex within the urban growth boundary. Don't let something that Beaverton is due affect all the rest of us negatively. Pass a bill that just protects Nike, if that's what you need to do.
No, not but, just that. I can't do that.
But please don't put a moratorium on. We need to get our Greater Salem area really working together efficiently, get away from all these intergovernmental agreements that cost us time and money and staff. And I would just really hope that you would help us to bring our economy back. We've done a good job. We're only growing about 2% a year. But this is the kind of thing that really could shut down the growth of our economy. So I appreciate it.
I have a hard time thinking that a two-year annexation would shut down your economy. Senator Atkinson?
I have a quick question. You heard some of my discomfort earlier, largely because of does this work the other way? And I look at your map right down here. I think it's by McClay Road. There's a bend.
Mitch, if you would. Vanna. Vanna, if you could. Right. Okay, you see that bend right there?
Yeah,
now,
the bottom. Yeah.
So you're clearing out the bottom, and there's all those houses right there that are outside of the city limits. However, you're about 75, maybe even 80% surrounding those with the UGB. Mm-hmm. Right? How hard is it if those people want to come into the city?
And they're outside the urban growth boundary.
Yeah, and they're just, I mean, it makes from here, mm-hmm. I mean, I know these roads here for a non-political reason, but, I mean, if you were to connect those two roads together, it makes logical sense. They're using services, they're using the park, everything you just said. They're probably even on sewer, not septic. How hard is it for them to come into the city?
If they're outside the urban growth boundary, uh-huh. Zero. We won't consider it this time expanding our urban growth boundary. And they are on septic tanks and wells. In fact, there are still a lot of areas in that gray area that are on septic tanks and wells.
So tough luck if you're outside the city.
Outside the urban growth boundary.
Or outside the urban growth boundary. All right.
Now, that's just not anything that we're even looking at in the next 20 or 30 years. But when you look at people that have septic tanks and wells in those gray areas, and that is a real high water table out there, we have instances where there's been some real pollution that isn't very good for children in some of those low areas because of the septic tanks. And, of course, if they fail, then by law we have to come up to city water and sewer. But what interests me so much is that we can really save some money if we can integrate all of that together and have that as really a part of our city. We can eventually save money by not duplicating services.
Thank you very much. Committee,
now, may I,
no,
may
excuse
I,
me.
Oh,
excuse
yes,
me.
Excuse me.
I just want to see. Go ahead, Senator Burdick.
Question.
Yes.
Would you say that the city taxpayers subsidize the people that are in those gray areas?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why we feel it's important that we bring that into the city limits. Our parks, library, all of that the city residents pay are used extensively by everyone else.
You said that they only pay for sewer and water, right?
Right.
Are they getting free police protection in any way?
No, that's provided by the county sheriff.
And so
county
a police
sheriff.
Car could be driving down the street and stop at the point that they go into the gray zone and turn around and go the other way?
Absolutely. And we get...
rather inefficient.
It's not good. And we've had phone calls in that Lancaster Mall or Lancaster area. We've actually had phone calls, people saying, why aren't you over here taking care of the car thefts? Well, we have to tell them, you know, you're in the county, you have to call the sheriff. And that's across from Lancaster Mall, which is in the city. So we have stores on one side of the street paying city taxes, competing with stores and restaurants on the other side that do not. And yet we're almost there.
That happens all over the state, though.
Yeah.
So the services that you think you're subsidizing are library and parks?
Library and parks. And
code enforcement.
Code enforcement.
Anything else?
Police and fire, you know.
Well, I thought you said police. They were, the sheriff had it covered anyway.
Right, and fire we don't subsidize, but the residents are asking us for increased service.
Okay, but the ones you're subsidizing, you're looking at libraries, parks, and code enforcement.
Right.
Right. And libraries, if that was a big concern, you could issue library cards.
They do,
library
and
cards.
If they actually want a card, they pay $60, but they can come and participate in the library, use the computers, read the books, do
so
everything.
Do you have any studies showing the amount of subsidy that occurs annually?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, because this has constantly been raised in Washington County, who's subsidizing who, and a lot of people said, no, Beaverton is subsidizing law enforcement in the unincorporated areas, and then you talk to the sheriff's department and figure out the percentage of people sitting in the jail, the Washington County Jail.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are Beaverton residents, probably because that's where all the delinquents are. But you know these the question of subsidization. You know, there's all sorts of theories thrown back and forth, but no studies.
Right.
And that's why I just take them with a grain of salt. Anyway, anything else from the committee? Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
May I have the economic development director speak for just a moment?
Just a moment.
Okay. I'll just take a moment. but I wasn't until today that I learned that there was a serious consideration of a moratorium.
There is very serious consideration.
My name is Larry Glasick. I am the president of the Strategic Economic Development Corporation in Salem and handle economic development activities in this area. I've been active for 30 years or more. I think that a moratorium would just be ridiculous. It would be a wrong message to send, and because no, you know, one size does not fit all. We cannot handcuff our cities. Cities are living, moving organisms and need to move quickly to accommodate the economic development needs of the communities. A moratorium would be very, very bad for the state and a bad message to send.
Okay. Thank you very much.
May I just
real quick? Real quick.
Okay.
Go ahead.
See those big blue checks right there at the bottom?
Yep, sure.
Huge. That's 100 acres. That's where Hicks Wheat Mushroom Plant was. They closed, lost 450 jobs. People were making $35,000, $38,000 a year.
Right.
They want to develop housing, and there would be a new school and parks and some commercial retail there. We need to let them.
You mean the owners want to do that?
The owners of the property now. They've torn down the old Hicks Wheat, so we have 450 people lost their job. New jobs would be created. We need to get that into the city.
The moratorium would be against forcible annexations. It would not preclude annexations from people, willing property owners who want to come in. I just want to make that clear.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
In some ways, we would have to force, because we would have to annex down the right-of-way to be able to get to them, so it would be forced.
Thank you very much. Gary Ritter, please.
Oh, I did not call him.
Oh, okay.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jerry Ritter. I'm here representing Oregon Communities for a Voice in Annexations. We are a group of, actually a coalition of citizens groups within 30 different communities around the state. We are here in strong support of Senate Bill 380 and Senate Bill 887, and also 699 with some amendments, which I'll discuss in a bit. The double versus single majority has been in the news so much, I think you're all pretty much aware of the issue there. I would like to address some of the arguments that have been raised by some of the opposition, who I will note are largely composed of public entities who seem to have a hard time with the public becoming more involved in the public process. First of all, regarding health hazard annexations, we are not suggesting that there be any moratorium on those. Those are non-discretionary. Certainly would not be our intention to put a moratorium on those if they are legitimately required. Secondly, this is not exclusively a Beaverton problem. You heard Senator Westland testified it was a problem in Bend, it was a problem in Redmond, and actually it was a problem in Springfield back in 1994 when the city was proposing to use 195. We were able to stop that. Regarding the argument about people not having a voice, we've been involved in pretty much every 195 annexation plan in the state that has either been proposed or has been used. We know how these things go down. The intergovernmental agreements that Mr. Hoffman discussed happen largely out of the public eye. Only when they are all agreed to and the plan is a done deal do most people hear about it. And that's why you saw such an outrage up in Washington County. Because by the time the people heard about this, they were not aware that the way the city was going to implement these plans. So the idea that the people have a voice in that process really doesn't happen in the real world. Regarding the vote, when you have a combined vote with a city population overwhelming that in the targeted area, those in the targeted area really do not have a voice in the process. In Bend, the city residents voted 3-1 in favor of the annexation. They outnumbered the UGB residents 10-1, who voted 3-1 against it. So no matter what those most impacted felt about the plan, they had no voice in the process. The cities insist that the combined vote is the only interpretation. Well, if you read the existing language, you could interpret it either way. We're talking 195, section 205 to 215 right now. That contradiction was pretty much acknowledged last year with the introduction of two diametrically opposed bills, as some of you may remember. The combined process has been called grossly unfair by the Lane County Commission when they denied Springfield the use of it. It's also the reason that Klamath Falls recently insisted on a double majority vote if the city were to annex its UGB. So we are very strongly in support of the people having a say in the public process. The current language, as it is being interpreted, of ORS 195 does not allow that. This is a classic battle of fairness versus expediency for city governments. And we would ask that you come down on the side of fairness. Now, the moratorium, we've heard the plan about the moratorium. It's been on again and off again. We've been in touch with Representative Girard's office. And we would be supportive of that as long as the hammer that was proposed was in place, i.e. an agreement gets reached within 2 years or the moratorium becomes permanent. And that's essentially my testimony on 380, and we would very much like you to support that.
Mr. Ritter, I have a couple questions.
Sure.
How do you respond to the questions raised about the city subsidizing services to folks outside the city limits?
And Mr. Chairman, I live outside the city limits, and I receive my services.
Where do you live?
I live in the Springfield Urban Growth Boundary.
Right.
I receive county sheriff. I am in a special water district. We contract with the city for fire services. We pay for every service that we receive, and we're very happy with those services. Now, I do use the city streets to go and shop in city stores. Now, would those merchants prefer that I don't use those streets and go shop someplace else? They, in turn, use our streets to come and visit relatives or go someplace outside the city limits and the county limits. Would they propose that we tax them for use of our county streets? You yourself, Mr. Chairman, I think, have looked into this, and your words, I believe, were the cities have not made their case for that argument, and we agree with that.
That I probably did say that. You got me there, but at least with respect to the Beaverton, Washington County issue, there's been lots of statements made, but very little proof to show who's paying for what services where. So,
agree with that.
Okay. Thank you.
Regarding, nobody has spoken about 699 yet. I want to have a few comments on that.
Okay.
699, we are, of course, very much in favor of people having protection against forced annexation, which 699 does, but only to a select few businesses.
That's the Nike bill.
No, 699 is not the Nike bill.
Lance bill, yep. Sorry.
Excuse me for that.
Sorry, go ahead.
699 is similar to the Nike bill, but it's broader in scope. It exempts certain businesses from forced annexation. Does not extend that right to everybody else. And we would certainly prefer that that bill be amended to extend the same right to all Oregonians. In addition, you may be aware of the Morseman et al. Versus City of Madras case, now I believe in front of the Supreme Court, where constitutionality issues have been raised about granting certain protections against annexation to businesses and not allowing those same protections to the other residents.
Thank you.
And then just on 887, which is the island annexations, we support that for the same reasons we support the others. The people need a voice in the process. You've mentioned cherry stemming. There's been a lot of intentional island creation, and it's not just in Beaverton.
Where else has that happened?
That's happened in Eugene, in the River Road, Santa Clara area.
What happened there? Tell me what happened.
They have created some islands through the use of cherry stemming. They have not annexed those islands yet.
I see. Cherry stemming meaning?
Meaning that the city annexes the streets and public right-of-way surrounding an unincorporated area, thereby intentionally creating an island. And the reason that the cities resort to these methods, 195 and island annexation, is so that they don't have to deal with concerns and oppositions in the targeted area. That's the sole reason that they do that.
I believe you.
No. I'll be happy to try to answer any questions that anyone has.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You're welcome. Senator Deckard, are you just listening or would you like to give us your wisdom?
Hi.
we'll wait until you testify, and then we'll decide.
Yeah, take a vote on whether there was any wisdom. Mr. Chair, just very, very briefly, Ryan Deckard, I represent, actually half my district is Beaverton, and half is unincorporated Washington County, and a little bit of, or about a quarter of it is Multnomah, so they don't really care as deeply about then this issue as the remaining Washington County folks. Mr. Chair, here's my just 2 cents for whatever it is worth on this issue. I feel, and the longer I have watched this process proceed, I feel even more strongly that that the legislature probably was going to have to take action on this, and that a moratorium or some sort of moratorium is in order on the annexation issue. I feel, and in part was benefited from a conversation with Brian Johnston, and I think, Mr. Chair, you shared that or were part of one of the conversations, and an idea that I was bringing to a House bill, but I'm just checked with counsel, we can certainly do it to a Senate bill. We were just told a House bill was the one that was going to move, and so amendments being drafted that I think a mediation process, which obviously the former president of Willamette, who now does mediation, is correct in saying that this is an issue that lends itself very, very well to the mediation process. And so the nature of the amendment, and we just didn't have it ready for this committee because it was prepared for a House bill, would be very simple. It would just say that no annexation shall occur. Then it would set up a mediation process consisting of 16 members. The way that we have designed it is the county commissioners would appoint 5 from unincorporated areas. The city council would appoint 3. You would include your legislative members to appoint 1 or 2 so that you would have a balanced group of 16, and then you'd have a neutral, the mediator. No annexation could occur while this mediation was happening. And why I think mediation lends itself well to this is because it takes an emotional issue for both sides and tries to hammer out a neutral ground, and that's the role of the neutral. The neutral would then present the findings, because you have to have a hammer at the end of the process, and the hammer would be that the neutral, ultimately through mediation, if the sides weren't able to come together, and the hope would be that they would, that they would actually be able to find either a process or a decision that that both feel reasonable satisfaction with. But if they can't, the neutral would deliver a report to the next legislative session prescribing an action that ought to occur, but giving the folks in the unincorporated area that breathing room that they would request of nothing will occur while this mediation process is occurring. So, Mr. Chairman, that's my story. I'm sticking to it, and we'll bring you an amendment if you ask us to that would achieve that.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Burdick.
City of Corvallis had, I think, 5 or 6 annexations on their ballot this last cycle, and most of them are uncontested. But are you saying that any contested annexation, the legislature is going to decide what happens to it?
No, Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, Senator.
That's the last committee.
Senator Burdick, this would be a process that would be prescriptive for certain areas if they choose to go into it. And so I think you'd have to identify the jurisdiction. There is one that I'm familiar with that I think this would be the ideal situation for jurisdiction that I'm very familiar with.
That wouldn't be in my district, would it?
No, but actually, I mean, if you look at the Tiger King City issue, that might be one. Because I'm familiar enough with the residents in the area on both sides of this issue and the city councils, and I actually think through a good mediation process, you might actually, what has been missing, incredibly lacking from all of this, is kind of a good discussion with the affected parties. You have a lot of these hearings, you have a lot of town halls with folks outside, like us or county commissioners, but what seems to be in very sporadic occasions is actually the two parties meeting to discuss out, are there net benefits? Is there a long-term strategy we'd like to achieve? And that's where I think the mediation process actually is ideally suited for something like that, where we would be prescriptive just of the jurisdictions because they asked us to get involved or we took the initiative.
I mean, just my comment is that I think the mediation makes sense in the Washington County context because there's been such a lack of trust or such a lack of communication, and it might bring them together. I'm not sure how you connect that with some legislative action, though, and I guess maybe that I need to see the amendments, but mediation can always be helpful.
We do. We spell it out in the amendments of how you would do that, and we'll, at your request, we'll bring it. We just were told earlier that a House bill was going to move, so we got it to a House bill, but we're now rethinking that.
Okay, good. Senator Shields.
I didn't have any questions.
Okay. Senator Byron?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Steve Bryant? You? I got this note you needed to leave soon, so I'm sorry if I delayed too long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Chair Ringo, and members of the committee. My name is Steve Bryant, and for the past 31 years, I've worked for the City of Albany, most of that time as planning director and then city manager. I have extensive experience in annexation issues in a non-metropolitan community and have been involved in annexation reform legislation in nearly every legislative session since Oregon's Model Land Use Program was established in 1973. And some of this you've heard before, and I'll try not to be repetitive, but I do want to emphasize that a very fundamental and still unique foundation of Oregon's land use system has been the establishment of urban growth boundaries and the requirements of cities plan for the logical and efficient extension of urban services within those boundaries. Over the past 30 years, Oregon cities have spent millions of public dollars, including considerable state grant dollars, to meet the requirements that we have for our comprehensive plan acknowledgement, periodic review, and very painstakingly detailed public facility plans in order to obtain the state's blessing to continue to grow within our urban fringe areas. Another state requirement that we must meet is the provision of a minimum of a 20-year supply of buildable and serviceable residential land within our urban growth boundaries. And despite these requirements and our lofty goals of achieving efficient land use patterns while protecting prime resource lands, we already have hamstrung our cities with some of the nation's most restrictive annexation requirements. The annexation bills before this committee present a further erosion of city authority to logically and efficiently extend corporate limits from urban services in accordance with statewide Goals 9, having to do with the economy, Goal 10, housing, Goal 11, public facilities, and Goal 14, urban growth management. Naturally, the unincorporated residents who benefit from lower property taxes while enjoying at least peripheral urban services are seldom very enthusiastic about annexation. And we've had that discussion already.
I mean, you're assuming that there's subsidization occurring.
Yes, I very definitely do. And a good example in our community, for example, and I think all of the cities who have been before you would tell a similar story. When the 911 calls in, and I'm a victim of a recent home burglary, and I know that you want an immediate response, we frequently respond to those areas for the county immediately outside of our city limits because we can get there faster than the county can. Do we bill those residents for those services? No. Do we respond in a case of emergency, whether it be ambulance or fire or police? If we're there, we're going to respond as we can. We do pass bond measures for support of things like, in our case, two new fire stations that the rural areas benefit from.
But you could have some services agreement, though, where the rural folks pay for that.
And we do.
So that would remove the subsidization argument.
To an extent, it does. It's hard to convince those rural fire protection districts to pay the same amount that the city residents pay. They would argue, for example, that with the fire stations located immediately in the city, they don't get quite as fast a response to the ambulance call because they're 10 minutes away instead of 2 minutes away.
I guess the subsidization argument, I think, is an important one, but again, it's all anecdote. There's very little evidence to support it, to me, it's an issue to be worked out that doesn't directly impact whether a property should be annexed or not.
Well, Mr. Chair, with all due respect, I would submit that it would. I don't think we've ever been asked to supply that kind of information. It would take some economic study to demonstrate that, but I have no doubt that anecdotal evidence would bear fruit if we went through that kind of analysis. It'd be pretty simple to show. In our case, the eight island areas I'm going to talk about in a minute that we recently annexed have definitely benefited from those urban services without paying the full freight.
Yeah, but I mean, in Washington County, the flip side is that the sheriff's office is providing security in the jail, and there's a lot of prisoners that end up there from the city, and I'm sure the same thing is true in Albany.
You know what people forget, and I have to remind our county commissioners, is that those of us in the city are paying the same county property taxes that the folks in the unincorporated area. So we're supporting that jail. We're supporting the sheriff's rural patrol services without receiving any benefit from the county's patrol services, even though we're paying the same tax for those road patrols as the unincorporated residents. An argument you haven't heard today is that the people in the unincorporated areas are now benefiting from increased development rights through Measure 37, and we're seeing a lot of Measure 37 claims come forward, mostly in these unincorporated areas. And they enjoy the constitutional benefits provided through Measures 5, 47, and 50. There's a cap now on how much we can tax property, and many Oregonians are up against that compression limit. So it's not as if there's this unlimited taxation burden that was going to occur should these properties be annexed. In most of our cities, property owners in these urban fringe areas have been on notice for over 30 years that their property is scheduled for eventual urbanization because they live within the UGB. Indeed, it is necessary to urbanize these areas if we're really serious about preserving prime resource lands. The resource lands offer the path of least resistance, and you've heard today why that's true. It frankly has become easier for cities to expand out into EFU lands and avoid this controversy with annexing these rural large lot developments against the property owner's wishes. So I believe we're having some unintended consequences of restrictive annexation policy that has been the incorporation first of resource lands within our urban growth boundaries, and the removal then of those resource lands from productive resource use, and the continued holdout of existing underdeveloped areas. Now, this pattern is leading to increased pressures to expand urban growth boundaries into surrounding resource lands while leaving existing partially or inefficiently developed lands within unincorporated fringe areas. Let me turn to specific issues in SB 887, the repeal of Island Area Annexation Authority. In my tenure with the city, I've been involved in all forms of annexation, and the result of the various annexations has been the formation of a number of island areas. Last November, we went to our voters, because we're one of the cities in the state that does require a vote on all annexations, a vote of the city resident. And our voters overwhelmingly approved these eight island area annexations. Seven of those eight areas were uncontested. We either didn't hear from the property owners or they simply had no concern or didn't participate in the hearing process that we conducted. The eighth area is a residential neighborhood. You'll see in the map that I've attached the largest of the island areas, and it truly is an island from the standpoint of one side is surrounded by a river, the other side by the city limits. That area has about 60 homes, most of which were already receiving city water service and benefiting from reduced fire insurance rates. And just today, we are hoping to reach a tentative settlement agreement with this neighborhood to complete the annexation because they've appealed it to LUBA. And in return for their dismissal of their appeal, we've agreed to delay the taxation until November 2006. I'll be happy to wrap up. The point there is that when you're faced with strong opposition in an annexation matter, cities have employed reasonable methods to try to reach agreement with property owners. The last points are that people are demanding that we operate more efficiently. This is a system that we have, a limited system to expand efficiently. Again, I want to emphasize that these boundaries have been with us for more than 30 years. And it's time that people recognize that maybe those boundaries predict eventual urbanization. We simply need the tools to continue to remove obstacles and unfunded mandates and ask you not to further restrict the tools that we have. One last comment I want to make, because I saw it and I was very alarmed by it, and that is the Dash 1 amendments that were submitted to you by Nike. There's a provision they didn't discuss that sent shivers down my spine as a city manager. It's on page 2 of the Dash amendments that basically says a city may not obtain approval of an owner for annexation action under the section by requiring or requesting that an owner waive remonstrance or agree to annexation in order to receive utility service or other city services located in the city right-of-way.
We need to wrap up here, okay? That amendment's not really on the table here.
Good. So. I'm glad to hear that. If that comes up, we would be very concerned about that. So,
thank you. Thank you very much. Questions from the committee? Thank you. Patricia Daniels? Sorry to keep you waiting.
Chair Ringo and Senators, thank you for your attention. Like a number of city officials before me, I would like to caution you that one size doesn't fit all. And Corvallis, the city in which I'm a city councilor, is one of those. And I'm going to just very briefly run. We've had vote on annexation, vote by the citizens of the city on annexation since 1976. And I want to run through quickly a half dozen points that I think are relevant to what you're talking about today. First, our annexations wouldn't even be coming before the voters were it not for the request of the owner. Secondly, in other words, the owner has to provide written permission. Secondly, there are exceptions for annexation. There's an exceptions clause in our charter and code that generally annexations go in front of the voters. The exceptions are in case of a health hazard, if state declares a health hazard, or for administrative error or something. To me, this sounds like you could drive a truck through it, but it's called limited development potential, whatever that means. But that hasn't ever come up.
You know, your first point about do you do forced annexations in Corvallis?
No.
You don't.
No.
So you don't have a problem with limiting forced annexations while we study the problem for 2 years?
Actually, let me get to the end of it and I'll tell you. I mean, I have a suggestion.
Okay.
So that's two things. The third is that it is in our charter, our comp plan, and our code that we do not and cannot extend services to any property until it's annexed. So that gets at that issue. It's not, and with those provisions in place, most of our annexations since 1976 have passed. That's a total of, the total requests was 3,655 acres. Almost 3,000 of those are now within the city limits. And in economic development over the last 10 years, we've had, with the regards for annexation, we annexed land that's resulted in approval of over 1,000 units of housing. Not all of those are built. There are probably between 500 and 600 built so far. And we've annexed about 110 acres for industrial land. Those haven't been redeveloped, but they have that potential, and there's industrial activity still taking place on those. It has not been a problem economically with relation to housing costs, although our housing costs have spiked significantly. That's something that happened since 92, between 1976 and 92, when we had votes on annexation during that period of time. Our housing price were pretty stable between 65 and 70,000. And of course by 2000 there were 159, but that had more to do with local economic conditions that caused a spike in the market. So let's see if I covered everything on this very messy page. Anyhow, so what I guess I'd like to say is with that set of provisions on our annexation process, we have been able to have orderly development that's resulted in continuous efforts towards infill, consolidation, and compact urban form. But this is only our city's process, and it might not work elsewhere due to geography or economic pressure or local political cultures. So what I would urge is that these issues not be addressed for all towns by a slew of bills in what's already been called a one-size-fits-all approach, but instead I'd urge that you consider creating an interim task force that would include representatives of small, medium, and large cities with a variety of approaches so that this set of issues can be thought through in a more comprehensive way and then recommendations coming out of that. That's it.
Thank you. I mean, just
from my perspective, I think we need a task force because I think it's a very complex subject, and this legislature isn't going to get it done between now and sine die. But I also think we need to slow down practices that have been abusive by some communities. And I haven't heard anything where any city would really face difficulty that they couldn't stand a 2-year moratorium on forced annexations. I am not convinced. But committee? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Nick Hicks and Marshall Koba.
Good afternoon, Chair Rangel and members of the committee. My name is Marshall Koba, here this afternoon representing Boise Cascade, and we are in strong support of Senate Bill 699. It was at our suggestion this bill was drafted, and with me today is Mike Hicks from Monmouth, who will bring our testimony. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman Rangel, senators, I need to get my glasses here. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 69. My name is actually Mike Hicks. I wrote it quickly, so I didn't. It's not Nick.
Oh.
I'm a Northwest Oregon area logging manager for Boise Cascade. I'm responsible for the management of procurement of raw materials from our three Northwest Oregon veneer mills. My office is located in Monmouth, and I report directly to the region management in Medford. The written testimony that you have there will be my oral testimony. I'm here to voice my support for Senate Bill 699, which prohibits annexation or incorporation of specified industrial lands without written consent of the landowner. It also declares that specified industrial lands annexed or incorporated with the consent of landowner retain in perpetuity development rights that apply when the land is annexed or incorporated. The bill was drafted to protect industrial manufacturing businesses in the state of Oregon from annexation into current cities and not allow unincorporated towns to incorporate industrial properties without their direct approval. Our interest grew as we began to monitor the drafting of the Urban Growth Management Agreement between the City of Medford and Jackson County. The purpose of this agreement is to promote the orderly and efficient conversion of the land within the urban growth boundary from rural and agricultural uses to urban uses, consistent with the city's comprehensive plan. The city would be administering development permits, building permits, and the collection of system development charges. Our concerns are shared by several Jackson County companies, including Timber Products, Fair Creek Corporation, Sierra Pine, all located within the outskirts of the city of Medford. Our concern is under this agreement, any expansion or development that was planned for those industrial zone sites would be subject to much higher costs from the cities for development charges, building permits, and systems development charges. While the city of Medford has openly stated that they would not target industrial property for annexation, there's always the possibility that a municipality may change their position due to economic conditions or change in the council perspective. Senate Bill 699 would help preclude these possibilities and guarantee that annexation or incorporation would not be possible without owner agreement. Annexation is normally done to provide city services to the entity being annexed, such as water, sewer, and security, etc., as you've heard today. However, businesses in operation already have the necessary service, either provided internally or through county and state services. There's nothing the city can provide that isn't already available, yet the additional cost of annexation or incorporation to the business can reduce its competitive position significantly. For industrial complexes, the increased regulations and taxes become a cost that reduces the chance for a business to survive in an increasingly more competitive global marketplace. This can significantly impact local economic development. In addition, Senate Bill 699 would not allow currently zoned industrial property to be incorporated into any city or town without the approval of the landowner impacted by the incorporation. One current example of the problem is surrounding this issue exists in White City, Oregon. White City is an unincorporated Jackson County town located just north of Medford, bisected by Highway 62. The east side of the highway is predominantly residential, while the west side is predominantly dominated by industrial businesses. Several years ago, Jackson County started a White City Urban Renewal Agency, which defined the boundaries around the current industrial businesses and residential dwellings. The concept of this urban renewal agency is to use the tax increment dollars to enhance business growth in the urban renewal renewal area, while upgrading the residential side of the highway with government offices, a boys club, Boys and Girls Club, Eagle Point Elementary School, and a community health center. The current urban renewal agency plans to expire in 2008. Following this, several of the residential occupants of White City have indicated they would like to begin to incorporate all of the White City, all of White City, which would include the industrial area west of 62. This will mean additional regulations and tax costs imposed on the businesses with no owner input or agreement. In addition, White City Urban Renewal Agency proposed a lighting district in White City in May of 2004. The residential citizens of White City voted in favor of this lighting district in November 2004. Passage of the proposed lighting district means that all of White City will have new lighting layout, despite the fact that 90% of the industrial businesses of White City Urban Renewal Area already have more than adequate lighting for safety. The cost of the industrial business for the project will exceed $5.5 million, with additional annual tax assessments. The problem is that the new lighting district was voted on by the residents of White City. However, the businesses effectively had no vote on the new lighting district because there are no residents at the industrial facilities and therefore no votes. Some feel this is tantamount to taxation without representation.
Mr. Hicks, if you could kind of wrap it up, that would be great.
I'm just about there.
Okay.
Passage of Senate Bill 699 would help provide the stable base for companies to continue to invest in their facilities so they can remain competitive in a progressively more competitive global market. Some reasonable assurances of future costs is important not only for building new facilities but for expansion and reinvestment in existing facilities. Boise, as well as most other companies, wish to do their part to being good corporate citizens. We want to continue to employ large numbers of employees who receive wages and benefits that are considerably above the statewide average. So, although I'm here representing Boise Cascade, I know there are many other companies, Chamber of Commerce groups, and economic development organizations who share our concerns. We all understand that industries can only remain competitive in the global marketplace if there is a favorable operating climate to invest and grow in. The pressure will remain for municipalities to absorb industrial areas into their tax base. You've seen that here today. Senate Bill 699 would provide the needed insurance for industrial production base of the state to grow, prosper, and provide long-term family wage jobs that are critical to a state with one of the highest unemployment rates in the nation. Senate Bill 699 is good for communities and good for Oregon's economy. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hicks. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lisa Hamilton, are you here? Okay.
Good afternoon, Chairman, Senators. I'm Lisa Hamilton Trike. I'm a resident of unincorporated Bull Mountain. I'm one of the founders of the Friends of Bull Mountain. My neighbors and friends and I have been deeply involved in the ORS 195 annexation attempt by the city of Tigard. I think we all are familiar with the outcome of that annexation attempt. I sat in on two public hearings, one in December of 2003, another one in July of 2004. Approximately 200 residents attended each of those public hearings. Approximately three dozen people testified in each public hearing. Some of those testifying were actually residents of the city of Tigard. And only one person in each one of those public hearings was in favor of a single majority annexation vote. So I think it's safe to say that it's been a very contentious, unpopular way to annex a large territory. I don't know how familiar you are with the Bull Mountain area. The unincorporated area is about 1,400 acres, 8,000 residents. And had we been subjected to a single majority annexation vote, we would have been outnumbered about 6-1. As the vote turned out, there were about 90% of the people in unincorporated Bull Mountain who said, no, thank you, this does not work for me. I don't see the cost, nor do I see the benefit of being annexed to Tigard at this time. Chairman Ringel, I'm with you in regards to the question about subsidy. until we see some real numbers, I think it's really hard to throw around accusations that one community is subsidizing another. And I'm under the assumption that Washington County is working on those numbers, and they're to be producing them sometime, I think, late in the summer. And in the case of Bull Mountain, unincorporated Bull Mountain, we pay for the enhanced sheriff's patrol, and that's several hundred dollars a year that we pay for the higher level of sheriff's service. We also pay a street maintenance fee to maintain the streets on our roads. We also pay a street lighting fee for our lights. Our sewer is provided by Clean Water Services. Clean Water Services provides sewage services to Durham, King City, Tigard, to everybody. It's exactly the same. Nothing would change with annexation. Our water is provided by the Tigard Water District. The district also provides the exact same service to Durham and King City and to the residents of the city of Tigard. Our fire service is provided by the Tualatin Valley Fire Department. We pay for that service. The library, we pay 51% through our county taxes. And the city of Tigard just passed a $14 million bond to build their new library. And those of us who live in the unincorporated area, of course, didn't vote on that. And the expectation, I guess, is that we should be annexed and then pay for it, even though we did not have a say in it. And I personally would not have supported building a library that large in that location on the wetlands. I think it's a shame, and I would not have voted in favor of it. People in unincorporated Bull Mountain can just as easily use the libraries in Sherwood or Beaverton, which a lot of people do. Or the city of Tigard could issue library cards, and as people use those facilities, they could certainly pay for them, and I think that would be very fair. Let's see. As for parks, unincorporated Bull Mountain is terribly park deficient. On the south slope, there's not one single acre of parkland. We have proposed forming a local improvement district. We've proposed exploring annexation to Tualatin Hills Park and Rec District. And unfortunately, under the heavy hand of the urban service agreement that was signed without citizen involvement from the people in unincorporated Bull Mountain, we have been denied an opportunity to try to fund and solve our own problems. And I think therein lies the biggest problem in this annexation question when you're talking about large territories like unincorporated Bull Mountain is, Mr. Ritter commented, the urban service agreement is signed mostly without citizen involvement. And by the time it's done, all of your other options are not a possibility for communities. Those of us on the south slope asked for a delay in this annexation attempt. We asked for an opportunity to explore annexation to King City, and the city of Tigard lobbied against that. And it's really a shame because, who knows, we could have possibly found a way at that time to annex into a city, but our options were limited.
Just a couple more minutes, please.
Sure. And then one other comment about representation. I think that there's a lot of misunderstanding. I'm with you. I think this is a very complex issue, and I think it's very hard for people to wrap their heads around it and understand what it's like on the ground level. For those of us in unincorporated Bull Mountain, of course, we don't have representation from the key decision makers, who are the people of the city of Tigard. Our county commissioner also has an obligation to King City and to the city of Tigard, so he can't represent us exclusively. And we've had to go to a state representative and the level of a state senator to try to find somebody to listen to our issues. And I think that's a shame. And should you choose to create task forces, please let the citizens be involved as well. I don't want to advocate my opportunity to participate in that to city councilor of Tigard or a county commissioner who doesn't really represent our interests.
If you could wrap it up, that'd be great.
Okay, appreciate it. That's it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I really appreciate you coming down here to testify about that. Linda Ludwig and Randy Tucker, if you want to wrap this up, that'd be great.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll start since Linda's making her way up, and I'm going to be very quick. And Linda knows way more about... Oh, Randy Tucker, by the way. Metro,
the
Legislative Affairs Manager. you've heard a lot. I'm not going to repeat everything everyone said. The one interest that I want to express that of the Metro Council is has to do with our with the council's responsibilities with respect to growth management in the Portland metropolitan area. State law requires the Metro Council to provide adequate land for growth in the region. And over the last 2 years, the Metro Council has brought over 20,000 acres into the metro urban growth boundary. That's a lot of land. It's the largest amount. The 2002 UGB expansion was the largest UGB expansion in the history of Oregon's land use system. And the kinds of policies that are being described, or that would potentially become the policy of the state in Senate Bills 380 and Senate Bill 888, specifically the ones that you're looking at today, would make it much more difficult to ever bring land that around the edges of the urban growth boundary that is brought into the urban growth boundary to address the pressures of population growth. Into cities. Essentially, if the Metro Council is bringing land into the urban growth boundary, and the residents of that land will always have veto power over whether they will ever become members of a city, then I have to echo Mayor Taylor of Salem, who said we have to remember we're talking about an urban growth boundary, and so that the long-term effort to urbanize land in order to accommodate growth is put in jeopardy by the bills in question. So,
do you have a problem with a 2-year moratorium while we look at this carefully?
Metro Council certainly does support taking an interim look at, as you described earlier, Senator Ringo, at the issue because of the complexity of the cross-cutting issues of representation, of land use, of growth management, of subsidy, of public finance and taxation. That's certainly preferable to long-term decisions made piecemeal in the legislature this session. In terms of a moratorium, I think that would be that seems like the way it's going, and that's if that's the what it takes in order to be able to have this more sort of comprehensive conversation, then I think that would be we'd live with it.
Thank you very much. Linda.
Senator Ringo, members of the committee, in terms of wrapping up this issue, I wish I could wrap it up for you and give it to you with a nice bow and a box that it fit, and unfortunately it doesn't. You've heard today from a bunch of cities and a bunch of concerned citizens, and annexation law in this state is complex, it's confusing, and there are issues that need to be addressed. You've heard me say this before to committee members, and the House committee heard me say it as well. We would propose, the League, that instead of taking immediate action, to some degree, possibly regrettable action for some cities across the state, whatever action we take, we would hope that it would not have statewide policy impacts, to look at an interim legislative committee that would have a work group that would look at the issues of annexation because of the complexity, because of the intersection with job creation and economic development. About 90% of all annexations go through the system that we currently have seamlessly. They're handled, they're either by petition, by a property owner, or by election. And the ones that don't do so because of specific cases, it would be nice to take some time and figure out why they don't work and really address those issues. The League started doing a survey last summer, and this is the second document that you have here, knowing that we were going to have to look at some annexation reform in the future. And I want to turn you to page 6 on that, methods of annexation. There are 13 different ways to annex land in this state for cities. And if you look at that list, you'll understand why it's so complex and why we have some of the problems we do.
I really like your idea of a task force to look at this carefully, because it's a very tricky subject. You kind of are encouraging, maybe this moratorium can only apply to Washington County. I guess a couple things. One is a lot of legislators have concerns about what's going on in their district, as I outlined earlier, whether it's Kirk Schrader in Canby or Ben Westland in Bend, and down in the Medford area. I mean, there's lots of places that say, whoa, this is not working. We want to slow this down. And the testimony from the cities, frankly, seemed pretty hysterical that, you know, you're going to kill economic development. I say, a 2-year moratorium on forced annexations? I just don't buy that. I mean, don't you think that's a little overblown?
No, I don't, Mr. Chair, and here's the reason why. With all due respect, you're talking about, in all these different areas, different types and methods of annexation. And yes, there are glitches within those methods and how they have been applied in certain circumstances, but they are not all the same. There is not the same problems in one area with one method of annexation than another.
I agree with that. But explain to me the harm of doing a moratorium statewide where we just say we're not gonna force residents to be annexed until we look at the whole process more carefully.
Well, to some degree, if you take that with the island annexation method, just for a moment,
right,
and require just consent. You say consent annexation's okay. You're gonna, with a developer, you say that it's okay for a developer to come into a city and ask for an annexation. Over a 2-year period of time, certainly a city is going to want to capture that development, but in turn, in doing so, they're gonna create new islands and pockets, because oftentimes those consent annexations, when they're brought from a developer, they have to be contiguous to the city,
right,
and then they flip-flop. They are annexed in a piecemeal basis that in the end of 2 years, where we have faster growing cities, Central Oregon, you're going to see more, possibly, likely, more piecemeal at the end of 2 years, and I have some concerns about that. Outside of the economic development arguments that for some of our areas I think are very real, perhaps not as real in the metropolitan area today as in Central Oregon.
Well, okay. Committee? Did you want to? Okay, well, did you have more to inform us on?
Just a couple of comments specifically on the bills. On Senate Bill 886, the Notice and Public Hearings Bill, the League does not have opposition to that bill. We would support that bill. 887, we would like to very much work with the committee to develop some amendments that would ease the burden on cities instead of repealing or require a moratorium on island annexations. We do not take a position on Senate Bill 888. Senate Bill 380, the Urban Service Provider Annexation Bill, that is a method that's been utilized 3 times in the state. We've had 3 other trials. There is some glitches to that method, and we do need to look at how that is done in the integration of the urban service agreements with cities, special districts, and counties. I believe that bill is someplace that the interim committee should go if we do have one. We do not take a position on Senate Bill 732 and Senate Bill 699, the Boise Cascade Bill, I think potentially could be problematic if we start offering special exemptions for lots of corporations.
My sense is, Linda, we're not going to be moving any 1 or 2 or 3 of these bills, but it's going to be more of an attempt to move one bill to deal with everything. So we'll definitely give you a chance for all the input you want in that process. Okay?
Thank you.
Good. Thank you very much. And, yes, Senator Shields.
I just wanted to read into the record that Gene Grant, mayor of Happy Valley, called, he may be one of the hysterical mayors that you've been talking about, but he's a strong supporter of annexation. And he said, Happy Valley grows by annexation, you know. He's opposed to 380, opposed.
Didn't they just have a voluntary annexation, though? Happy Valley?
Don't ask me. I just wanted to read into the record.
Okay.
He's opposed to 380, 887, opposed to 732 and 699.
Thank you very much, Senator Shields. And this adjourns the committee here.